Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, and this is going to be a good one because we're going to focus on one of your favorite subjects, customer experience.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this segment for some time. We are going to have the pleasure of visiting with the founder and CEO, the Grand Poobah, the Chief Mohaw of an organization called Motivated. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Miss Donna Peoples. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sean and Lee. It's great to be here.
So now, customer experience is near and dear to your heart, isn't that right?
Absolutely, both as a customer and as a business person.
Can you share a little bit about how you got involved in the customer experience?
Well, my history has really centered and focused around top-line growth. And so this new wave of really putting the customer at the center of how we think about our business day to day and more strategically over the long haul too, isn't anything that's really new to me. But I think because the environment, the market has changed so profoundly with communications being real time, two-way communication, the customer has become much more powerful. Instead of let the buyer beware, it's now let the seller beware. So, you know, it was a natural move from top-line focused work into the customer experience and how that could affect the success and profitability of the business.
Because there was a time where you could get away with bad customer service.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Like where a person had to write a letter in to complain. You know, maybe our parents or our parents' parents would do something like that. But nowadays, with the internet, like you said, everything's real time. If I'm mad, and I'll be honest, this happened to me. I was on the phone and I was upset with somebody and I told them, I am tweeting right this second about this policy that you're doing. And literally within seconds, I got a tweet back from their customer service. And all of a sudden, like magic, something could be done to solve my problem.
Absolutely. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head because it's not just word of mouth anymore. It's a world of mouth. And instead of telling, the old stat was we'll tell 10 people about a bad experience, we'll tell 10,000 of our closest friends right away. So yeah, that's a very big risk reputationally to a company.
Now, are you seeing that companies are... I would think that larger companies are kind of afraid of this because they're used to controlling the message so much. And then now you're kind of having to trust your customers to kind of carry some of the message load for you, right?
Absolutely. And it can be good and it can be bad. It's truly a double-edged sword. People have become the media.
Right.
And so a company should at least at this point be monitoring. You know, we're not talking about emerging technology or opportunities here, but monitoring that and then making a thoughtful and deliberate effort to, you know, inflect their opinions into the conversation, I think, is the best thing to do right now. So, and then take it offline if it's bad.
Right. So the baby step is monitoring. So do you have any tips on monitoring, how you would implement some sort of a basic monitoring
program? Well, there's a lot of technology available out there. And, you know, one of the things about technology is that, you know, you don't want to do technology for technology's sake. And goodness knows, if you automate already broken processes, you're just making more customers angry quicker than ever before. So I would absolutely take a look at that, but not just from a negative perspective. You know, also take a look at the positive comments and the neutral comments. Those people in the middle are the ones who can be moved.
So, and that's an interesting strategy because a lot of people just look at it in a crisis, like, oh, they're saying something bad, so that's the person that gets my attention.
Right.
And you're saying to look at it more holistically, and even the person that's saying I'm deciding between company A and company B on a tweet or a Facebook post, that might be the exact right person to go after because you have a chance to change their behavior.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of work that's being done around net promoter scores. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, would a customer promote you to somebody else, you know, based on their experience? And, you know, what we find with companies is they do focus on the negative when sometimes, you know, those aren't the people that you can move into a positive light around your company. Sometimes the decision has unfortunately already been formed, but the people in the middle absolutely are your best target to move one direction or another and retain.
Now, you mentioned net promoter score. Can you kind of educate our listeners to what that means and how to
Yeah, well, and we've all probably participated in surveys. And those questions that we get asked, if you are satisfied with the interaction that you've had with that company, and then if, in fact, you would promote that company or product or service mm-hmm. to others. You know, if I'm a sales forecaster, it's a little bit out there. It's almost a leading indicator in some ways, because what you're trying to do is triangulate around, you know, what is this customer going to tell somebody else, and then what action are they or are they right. not going to take? So it's a good indication and gives you a way to really put a barometer on where you are. But I think the real measure is your ability to retain customers, your ability to, you know, grow share of wallet with those customers. That's the hard metrics that the companies are looking at.
Are the companies interested in knowing if you would refer company A to your friends, or are they more interested in knowing, did you refer company A to your friends?
It's a question of would you.
So would you is mm-hmm. enough.
Yeah, it's really a forecast.
Really?
Yes.
So now that the internet is rapidly on us and it's no longer a fad, right?
Right,
it seems like I would can say, be here for a while, right?
Well, if you'd told me 5 years ago my mother would be my friend on Facebook,
right,
I wouldn't
have
believed you.
That.
But truly.
But some of the larger companies are still doing the kind of old way of marketing and using the same type of methodology that they used to do when there were only, you know, three channels and, you know, one newspaper in every market.
Absolutely.
So how do you recommend that companies utilize the internet to leverage their relationships?
Well, I think the best approach is always an integrated approach, and understanding that there are connections and interdependencies. There are things that are influencing business opinions of our customers, both existing and potential, that as companies, we just don't have a lot of control over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell people that, you know, there's this whole stakeholder universe out there, and it includes everything from the employee,
right,
which, you know, empowered, engaged employees are a huge component to a successful customer experience program. But then it goes all the way out to the edge of the universe and includes the general public, which there's nothing general about,
right,
after all, as you know. So understanding those connections and really leveraging those up, I think, is the most powerful place. Not to think about the internet as one piece,
but as a
component.
Right,
So can you effectively recruit for the predisposition for providing solid customer experience, or does it all have to be in the training?
No, I think it's a combination. And
okay.
I'm so glad you asked, because, you know, one of the things, if you're going to do this kind of shift in the way you think about the customer, it has to start at home with every single employee. There is a lot of work going on around customer journey mapping, but there is truly an employee journey that intersects and is interdependent on the customer journey as well. So, you know, making sure that you are screening employees for the right skills and attributes if they're going to be customer facing, ongoing training, very, very important, and giving them the tools so that they feel like they can make a difference with the customer. Those things are important.
Because now, especially in the more complex sales, the customer is coming to the company at a different point in the sales cycle, right?
Right.
Yeah. They're more educated. At one point, the salesperson was the one that was educating the customer on whatever the service or whatever the product was.
Right.
And today's world, the customer knows maybe more than the salesperson, or definitely has a wider breadth of knowledge.
That's right. And access to information.
Right.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, the points of inflection, you know, we think about decision points, and there are so many now. And really understanding from the perspective of the customer, you know, a lot of times we as companies feel like we're the experts. We crawl
right.
into our focus
right,
group of one.
Right. We live this every day. Who knows more
right.
than us? Right?
Exactly. And so really, you know, taking a look from the customer's perspective, understanding, you know, what is driving that behavior and how do you want to productively change that? And really designing a strategy around that is important. Setting goals, you know, making sure that everybody in the organization is aligned in the same way towards the same business results, and we don't act in silos, and that's not a natural thing for most companies.
Now, are you finding that the companies are okay with the frontline people going on their own Facebook and using social media? Like, or how do they?
Isn't
kind
that
of
a little scary?
That line between I'm a person and I'm an employee, you know, it gets kind of blurred.
It's a jungle out there,
right?
Yes, it is. And we see different things. Some companies are more forward thinking, and you know, the reality is, they're out there.
Right. They're on their phone. Everybody's got a smartphone.
Yeah.
Right?
My mother's out there. Hi, right. Mom. So I think, you know, making sure you monitor that, you know, you can't have a lot of rogue behavior, but there's no way to.
But you have to treat them like adults, right?
Correct.
They're going to do the right thing. You hired them in the first place.
Correct.
Right? You must have thought something.
That's right.
Point.
I tell my daughters the internet never forgets.
That's right.
So always remember that. But yeah, and I think more and more companies have come around to thinking, you know what? It's more dangerous not to be out there than it is to be out there, because if you aren't out telling your story, if your employees aren't, that's right. And it's probably not going to be what you want them to say.
That's right. I was telling people that if you think you're not branding, you're wrong.
Branding. That's right.
So now when you're defining customer experience, it means a different thing now,
yeah,
right? Because the experience could be that tweet they saw, the experience could be the website they saw, the blog post.
That's right.
It could be
a brick and mortar experience.
Right.
So, yeah. There's a lot of debate around where does it start and where does it stop.
Right.
And I think more often now we're thinking that it's just a circular.
It's kind of fluid, right?
That's right. And you hope it's circular because, you know, from the point that they are aware and become informed about your company or your product, you know, you hope for some form of renewal,
right,
or continued service. So I do think it's circular, and breaking it into pieces and, you know, making sure that you're striking the right segments. You know, I'm not delusional. You know, the companies that we work with are, you know, really looking for where can you have the most improvement the soonest, because we all have ADD.
Right.
And we have earnings to meet every
right,
corner.
Sure.
So, you know, where can we be most impactful and efficient with the resources that we have?
And
what's going to be the ROI?
And it's important that you have congruent messaging throughout, right?
Correct.
So that if they hear seven times, you know, something like, you know, this, and then all of a sudden they hear something that's opposite.
That's right.
Then it's incongruent. Then they lose, because authenticity is an important component of this, right?
Absolutely, and trust.
And then the consumer is looking for that moment to say, oh, you're not who you say you are, I'm out.
That's right, and they'll call you out on
right?
it, as we talked about. So, yeah, consistency is important, but I think, you know, now more than ever, because, you know, with technology, we can literally have it all. Y'all.
Right.
It's, you know, we live in this fascinating time where, you know, one size fits one.
Yeah.
And so consistency doesn't mean that it's mutually exclusive of standardization or personalization.
Right.
You know, it's the ability to really tailor with an overarching look and feel to that company. Exactly what that customer
right.
wants.
So it feels like it's just done for me.
I'm the most important person.
Right.
Yes.
And then do you see some companies that are doing a good job, better job than others?
Absolutely.
Which are your all-stars?
Well, the rock stars, uh-huh, obviously, are the Zappos and Amazons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm happy to remind everybody that, you know, great service is not something that's new. You know, you have the Ritz-Carlton, who's won right. the Malcolm Baldrige Award twice. You know, it takes an act of Congress, literally, to win that. But, you know, deciding, you know, what do you want to be? And sticking to it, I think that's the message that, you know, a Ritz would tell you that they have really defined themselves by. And that's, you know, the world that Zappos and Amazons, you know, it's, we all can't be those things.
Well, some of them, I mean, like Ritz or Nordstrom, they're more premium luxury.
Correct.
So, you know, in your head you think, well, they have more margin to be that much more generous.
Right.
But an Amazon, where you can get pretty much low prices and they still find
that's
a
right.
way to wow the customer. You
that's
know,
right.
So that says something, that it doesn't have to just be the premium luxury
that's
brand.
Right. And we're going to get delivery by drone soon.
That's right.
Right.
So, yeah. And, you know, I think about, you know, here in town, one of our favorites, Chick-fil-A.
Sure.
You know, my
mm-hmm.
daughter, great employee experience. My oldest daughter was an employee there, and it was just amazing the way the organization works and trains those folks. But, you know, she quickly reminded me, I said, you know, Dawn, you know, fast food is a really, really tough business.
Yeah.
And she said, Mother, it's not fast food, it's quick service. You know? So, you
someone
know,
got the message
that's
in
right.
training, right?
That's right. The Kool-Aid was being served. So she's and we're big fans. So that's another great experience. You don't have to be, you know, a luxury item.
Right.
To
just by being polite. It's amazing what a differentiator
absolutely.
That is in the fast food experience.
That's
quick
right.
service.
Yes. And the food's great.
Well, no, framing like that, I'm sure, is very important. Can you speak to recovery a little bit? And what I mean by that, things are going to go wrong, even at an Amazon, even at a Zappos, even at a Chick-fil-A. And I suspect the way that employees and the organization handle recovery is very key. Yes?
Absolutely. And the employees who are empowered and feel like they can take control and solve the customer's problems are really, that's where the customer satisfaction scores are highest. You know, customers are not going to reward you with repeat business if they are not satisfied. And not having their problem resolved is the primary cause. We, at a company I was working with recently, we had done a complaint handling policy. And one of the things that, you know, we saw was the number one root cause of any of those complaints was that company's inability to communicate with the customer in a timely manner and solve those problems.
So they were just ignoring.
Exactly. And so, you know, you
have
can't
complete control over
that's
that.
Right. That you do. And so that's a really, really important part of providing
listening.
Good. That's
wow.
right. Because you're right. Problems absolutely are going to happen. There's nothing you can do to stop that. So what you
so
can do is
just do what your mother told you to do when you were a little kid.
That's right.
Be a good policy for a lot
that's
of
right.
businesses.
That's right.
Right.
Take accountability and
right.
apologize.
Take responsibility,
that's right.
apologize. Try to
that's
make
right.
it right.
That's
you know,
right.
those kind of things work in business as well.
That's right. And even, you know, during those times where you can't possibly give the customer what they want in return
right.
for that bad experience, you know, being very clear and explaining the situation. Sometimes, you know, it's amazing, but we can get, you know, great accolades from the customer just because we did a good job of
you
explaining.
Tried, right. You
yeah.
tried and you were like a human being.
That's right.
Instead of this faceless corporation that doesn't care about me.
Absolutely. Customers are people too.
Right.
Believe it or not. So
so earlier in the conversation, mm-hmm. you mentioned the term customer journey mapping.
Correct.
Which suggests to me that we really can apply rigor, discipline, methodology, structure to all this. So is that something you bring to an organization? And if so, can you kind of walk us through at least some of the early stages of an engagement?
Yes. And customer journey mapping is we've done some format of it all along, but now we have a name for it. And so it's really identifying what those touch points are and what they are in relation to what's important to the customer. You know, we tend to think of processes from our own perspectives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a report out recently that said in a typical call center environment or contact center, the representative has to bring up in 2013 five screens to answer a question. It jumped year over year to 2014 to seven screens. So, you know, what's going on behind the scenes? We can grind all the sausage we want to. The customer
right.
doesn't care. So, you know, really identifying what are those particular points where we can make a difference, where we can, you know, either assist the customer or where we can change the way they think about how they do business with us is really an important part of that map. And, you know, understanding not only what are those points of inflection that exist, but what are the gaps that we've created either through technology or our own processes that we can fill to improve that experience.
Because going in, you don't want the experience, you don't really want satisfaction, right? You don't want customer satisfaction. You want to be more than that.
Right, right.
Right? You want some wow factor.
Well, and you want to have more business
right.
with that customer. You know, it's if you don't believe this, just ask my ex-husband. It's cheaper to keep them. Shout out. But yeah, and so customer acquisition is a lot more expensive than it is to retain a customer.
Customer retention.
That's right. So really, that's the basis for all of this work is retaining the customers that you have and growing share of wallet, share of mind with those customers.
And then you want share of their friends, too.
That's right. Own a friend.
You want that whole network.
Now, that's right.
In your work, are you starting to see some patterns, some of the same common mistakes from organization to organization? You walk in and you just know within the space of a few minutes, here we go again, but I think I can help them with a few quick leverage points and we can get them going in the right direction.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the symptoms of, you know, the bigger disease is that, you know, we have companies who really don't think about things as holistically as they need to. They don't internally connect the dots and understand, you know, the potential points of impact that they can
have. Because they think of just through the prism of themselves. Like, I sell this.
That's right.
And then
that's right.
Customer is like kind of just a means to an end to sell more.
That's right. Or, you know, technology. We love technology.
Right.
But, you know, we can't get hooked on that without understanding how we're affecting
the customer benefits and how they're using it and leveraging it. And what can I do more for them
to get
more out of it?
That's right. So I think if I had a theme over the last year, it was really making sure that those connections and conduits exist and that the information flow internal to the company is being served before you can hope to serve a customer.
Now, when you're having that type of a conversation, that high-level strategic conversation, is that eye-opening to some executives, like that they don't even look at it that way?
I think what it's a very interesting question because, you know, a lot of these changes, we're talking about some pretty fundamental cultural shifts that have to happen. And, you know, anytime you shine a light on things that haven't seen the light of day in quite a while, it can get pretty scratchy, you know, because, again, especially if the business has been very successful, why do you want to
change?
You know?
We know what we're doing.
That's right. And so, you know, getting the senior team typically to understand and take a look and see the gaps is not as difficult as thawing that frozen middle. That doesn't want to move.
Because they like the status quo. They're in a good spot.
Yeah.
Well, they got to figure it out, right? They learn the rules. They got it wired now.
And, you know, they've survived for a reason. They'll wait you out, you know? so yeah, that's the hardest part, I think. You know, at first, with any good 12-step program, you admit you have a problem.
Problem is the first step, always. Right?
That's right.
But as you look outside to capture information and insight, our experience, and maybe it's a little bit unique because we're sort of in the media world, but our experience is that existing clients, prospective clients, strategic alliance partners, professional associations, they're delighted to share their perspective if you'll just ask, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the other things that I see as a symptom is that, you know, I was talking to a company and I said, well, hey, you know, we were talking about journey mapping and they said, oh yeah, we've got journey maps. And I said, well, terrific.
Wow.
You know, you're ahead of the curve. I said, tell me about that process. Well, we got in a room and we mapped it out. And I was
like, it's in the closet.
That's right.
I have a folder. I'll show you.
So again, you know, get out of your focus group of one. You know, and let's talk to some real live customers because you're absolutely right. Some they do want to share their opinion and they want to know that there's a difference made. That's the other thing. You know, once you start doing this, you've got to start
implementing what they want, though.
That's right. So the measures are so important. You know, as a former chief marketing officer, you know, I learned a long time ago, you better learn the language of the CFO. The trick was never getting the marketing budget. The trick, my friend, is keeping a marketing budget. So, you know, what is your return on investment around all of this work? You have to know where you are. You have to be willing to look at the ugly truth and put some measures around that, but then, you know, really track that and trend it, you know, and learn from everything that you're doing.
So what are the measures that you find that the CFO gives you high fives?
Retention and profitability, actually. Yeah. Growing share. Those are the hard hitting, you know, everything else just kind of blends in together. We talked about the NPS score, but
so customer retention is an important component.
Absolutely.
A CFO, when they see the same customers year over year spending a little bit more, they're high-fiving.
Absolutely.
That gives them a sense of security and comfort that the company will be around another year or so, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And it does get that simple, you know?
Now, in today's world, we're seeing in Atlanta seems to be a hub of this marketing automation kind of boom lit that's happening now. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of companies here that are playing in that space. How does that impact CMOs nowadays? Because what we're seeing is, you know, in the typical sales funnel, at the top of the sales funnel, you need those inbound leads, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what the CMO is charged with, bringing in that, you know, strangers and new people, as well as retaining existing people. Are you seeing that as becoming a driver for a lot of marketing budgets now? They're investing in kind of these marketing automation programs, and then what those needs obviously are content driven programs as well.
Right, absolutely. And again, I think the theme is connecting the dots. You know, it's I think it's overused, but you know, the omni-channel platforms that you have to be aware of, the consistency,
right,
Lee, that you mentioned earlier, is important no matter how it's delivered. You know, customers expect, you know, what they have been told until,
right,
you prove differently. But yeah, those are investments that are being made. But you know, I think there's a lot of science, a lot of data. Yeah, the caution that I always give customers is, you know, never forget that beneath all that science, beneath all those models, beneath all that data, is a person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No matter what segment, you know, you're talking about. So. So that would be my guidance. But I think, you know, the automation is terrific. And I mean, we're smarter than ever before. But
sometimes when you can measure something, you just because you can doesn't mean right, that it's yeah, worth measuring, right? Right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there's all this data. You know,
right,
we deal with big data now.
Right.
It's not just data. It's big data. And so, you know, big data, little data, just give me the right data, I always say. Yeah. And trying to find out what that is, you know, you're swimming in it, you're drowning in it. It's always a challenge to try to understand how to apply all of this information you have. And then understanding, like we talked about earlier, there's so many things going on out in the market that you have absolutely no control over now.
Right.
And how do you blend that information in real time so that you can productively influence customers' decisions at the right time?
Because ultimately, all the big data and all of the numbers and stuff, there's somebody that's going to write a check.
That's right.
Or not.
Or not.
Right?
In the worst case, yes.
So now, what's the pain that a company's having when they want to engage with you? What are they kind of struggling with?
Well, the number one thing, I think, is the ability to retain customers. You know, that business model doesn't work for any company. You know,
if you always have to get new
customers.
That's
right. You can't lose.
It's only gyms, it seems. They're the only industry that seems
to
work.
Oh, I know. but then, too, with the advent of all of the work around customer satisfaction,
right,
and NPS scores, you know, there are forward-looking folks that are looking at the different quadrants that they're winding up in. And so that's another way that we can help. And, you know, applause to those companies that get out ahead of the actual quarterly numbers being affected. But
so now, is the CEO calling you, or is the chief marketing officer who?
It varies, and it's interesting because, you know, I think we're going through a time now where, you know, the old role of the chief marketing officer is changing so much because there's so much of the technology that you
right.
mentioned. You know, there's almost this blurred line between the CMO, the CIO, the CEO. You know, everybody's concerned about growth. So it varies.
Mm-hmm.
Chief revenue officers, you know, even so.
Right. Well, and I was going to ask, and are they calling you, or are you like proactively going out to the market and saying, hey, gang, we ought to talk. I've got some stuff I need to share with you, because you have to eat some of your own cooking on some of this.
Well, yeah, you only get to eat what you kill. Yeah. but yeah, both ways. You know, it's a push-pull strategy. So, you know, sometimes they call, and then sometimes I'm out beating the streets. Yeah.
But I'm sure they take your call. I mean, you conduct this conversation with such ease and with such depth and substance. I got to know, I want some insight into your backstory. How did all this get started for you? Have you always been in this arena?
No. Actually, my first love was sales.
Uh-huh.
Started in sales. I was a child prodigy. I've been in the business a long time. But it kind of grew. You know, I think I couldn't have mapped the path better had I been, you know, thoughtful about it. I wish I could claim genius. But the sales thing kind of led more into marketing. Once, you know, understanding that connection, the analytics came next and naturally, learning how to speak the language
right.
of the CFO. Then there was a time where I worked mergers and acquisitions, and worked with new business development. Again, the different approach to get better results and seeing the gaps. And just ahead of the housing bubble, you know, some of the work that we did at a company I was with at the time resulted in record earnings for two of the worst years in our economy. So, you know, if you can be more forward thinking and be out there ahead of the curve a little bit, be fearless, you know, and, right, and take those chances, show some managerial courage. But the customer thing, like I said earlier, to me, this is not anything new. I don't know, right, how any company gets along
without
it. Well,
because of that sales background, because you, right, know what it's like to sell somebody something. It's not a theoretical.
Yeah, what a rush.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you have that experience, I think that's what a lot of people are lacking. They've never sold somebody something.
Right.
You know?
That's why, you know, I talk with a lot of folks, and one in particular, his name is Paul Zak, and he's an author. He wrote The Moral Molecule. He talks a lot about trust, and he's actually done a lot of study around that. And, you know, he said something interesting to me one day. He said, you know, well, you know, you've really done this. I have the theory.
Right.
But you've really done it. So it's an interesting conversation that we have.
But that perspective makes a world of difference. And
absolutely,
that probably allows you to play nicely with the CFO and take the data and hear all of that. But then you synthesize it with the prism of, at some point, a person's going to talk to a person.
That's right.
And someone's going to write a check.
That's right.
So a human has to be involved here. So you have to give them a good experience. So it doesn't matter what you say or do. If it's incongruent or if it's inauthentic, it's not going to work.
That's right. And you know, I talked about connections. I think at the very base of all that is the ability to communicate, you know, with each other and people. Whether they're customers or, you know, they're your family.
So I'm sure all of that has served you extremely well, but also track record. I mean, there is no more powerful sales tool than having done good work.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So you have that benefit.
And getting
well
to eat what you kill, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. If somebody wants to learn more, where can they find you?
They can reach me through Denmark, the agency. And it's here in town in Atlanta, and they manage me very well. So shout out to Denmark.
So Denmark, the agency, and then just ask for Donna Peoples.
Correct.
And then that'll solve all your customer experience problems.
That's
right.
Absolutely. They can also find me on Twitter and on Facebook and on LinkedIn.
Every
and
social media. I'm
all
sure.
Those social media.
And that's Donna Peoples, P-E-E-P-L-E-S.
As in, I don't want to hear a peep out of you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for having me, Lee and Stone. This has been great. I've really enjoyed it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.